You're looking at the impression rather than the object that created. And when you look at a problem that has its roots in the subconscious, the behavior is like the clay that's like bulging out. It tells you something about the cause, but not everything.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today, my guest is Dan Barrett. Dan is a former client, and I want him to share his experience of how things have changed in his life since going through the program. Dan, how are you today?
I am doing amazing. Thank you so much for having me. I am pumped to be here.
You and I have talked a lot about this stuff since you've gone through the program, and you've taken some really interesting twists with your career and your interests. So we'll talk about those towards the end. But I want to ask you right off the bat, like, can you share with us what were you struggling with prior to meeting me or prior to starting the program?
Yeah, my primary issue that we worked on was I've always had a really, really critical inner voice. I mean, like a couple times a day, every day for basically as long as I would remember, just have an absolutely like withering kind of internal monologue. And most of the time, that's no big deal, right? Or it's like, it's there and I can kind of bat it away and it's fine. But what would happen is I would get in these situations where already in a bad mood or whatever, something's happening in my life, and that voice would kick in and it would just send me spiral. Right. And I would lose days or weeks, right? Just being in a crummy mood, being upset, being resentful. My friend Nick would always refer to this as a doom spiral, where it just kind of gets worse the more that you think about it. And man, if there's anything I'm really good at, it's composing an argument in my head about why the world is terrible and why everything is going awful. And yeah, man, it was all kind of due to that inner voice. That was the big issue that I wanted to work on. I think I remember when we first talked in my head, I was like, I like Brad, but I don't really know about this whole thing. So I think my goal was if I could turn it down from an 11 to a 9, that would be a massive, massive win for me. So that was the big issue.
I clearly remember that when I asked you, what is it that you want to be free of? What issue do you want to work on? You were like, Brad, all I really want to do is turn down the notch on the negativity by 2 or 3 notches. Yep. And of course, I didn't say anything, but I'm like, that's interesting. Only 3 notches. I was thinking, why wouldn't we want to turn it down to 0? But anyway, now I lose track of time. We're 2 or 3 months, 5 months done with the actual program.
It's closer to 6 or 7 months now.
Whoa.
I remember this right at the beginning of the year. But yeah, so since then, we did our kind of deep session together, right? And basically, since that day, I haven't had a single negative thought, right? Not one, right? Just 0. So the notch went all the way down to 0, which if you had asked me beforehand, I would have very flatly told you was not possible, much less possible without, I don't know, electroshock therapy or a lobotomy or something like that. So yeah, and I don't necessarily mean I never have a negative thought ever of any kind. I mean that specifically, that really critical inner voice, the one that would send me spiraling, it just kind of isn't there. Really transformative change for me that's had a lot of follow-on consequences I really couldn't have ever anticipated. Look, people don't know me or maybe don't know me or whatever. I'm a very analytical, very rational person. Right? I'm not what I would call a spiritual person. I'm absolutely not a religious person, right? I'm very much like, show me the spreadsheet. What are the numbers? You know, yada, yada. But I really view that as a miraculous change. It was a night and day change that I really would not have thought was possible at all. So really massive thing in my life for sure.
So Dan, I've got to tell you, like, I'm shocked too. Like every time we check in, I don't know, once a month, every couple of weeks, and we hadn't talked in a couple of weeks, and you've been touring with your band, setting the world on fire. And I thought you'd be like, well, I've had a couple of times where I've talked negative. So dude, like, this is my life, right? I help people with this. And I've got to tell you that I am extremely surprised at what a radical change you've made. I lose track of time, as I've said, but it was probably 8 months ago, 7 months ago that I went to say, you're an idiot to myself. And I caught myself. It's probably been 9 months now. And immediately, I didn't even get it out of the thought, I'm an idiot. I like stopped halfway and I go, wait. No. I'm not an idiot. I'm a human being and I made a mistake. Right. So yeah, man, I am so freaking proud of you that you were able to do that. So tell me, like, What did you do to go from this negative self-talk all the time to like nothing? Like, what did you do?
Yeah, so we worked together, right? So we had an initial session where we kind of talked about the issue and talked about my thoughts on what the issue was and meant. And one of the really fascinating parts of this process has been, for me, the realization, because I can be a cognitive person. I can be very intellectual in the sense that I like to think about my problems, right? And so I had a lot of theories going into session one. I'm like, here's what the problem is. That my problem is going to be blah, 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 blah. And I read this book that this guy says this and yada, yada, yada. We got into the second session, which was a really deep dive session where we worked together. And really what I found was none of that stuff I thought was the issue at all, right? This sort of conscious level of awareness of what the problem was literally nowhere near what the actual problem ended up being. And we worked together, kind of did the whole thing. And I remember after we finished, we were on Zoom, so we hopped off Zoom. And sorry, StreamYard, I don't want to talk about Zoom on StreamYard, but you know what I mean? We were on Zoom doing the thing. And I remember I got off that call and I walked downstairs. I was at my house. I'd taken a couple hours off work. So it was in the middle of the day. Walked downstairs. My wife was down there folding laundry or something. And she looked up and she was like, "What did he do to you?" And I was like wandering around like this, like kind of in a daze. I skipped work. I think I skipped the rest of the week. I thought it was like Thursday or something. I took the rest of the week off. I just took my dog for a walk. And I remember walking around my town. It was like pieces of a puzzle getting fit together. And I was like, oh, this connects to this. And this connects to this. And I do this because of this. And this happened because of this. And it was just like click, 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 all the pieces coming together. And it was a really exhilarating experience. I remember specifically walking the dog, walking by the pickleball court that's like near the community rec center. It's near my house or whatever. And just thinking to myself like, wow, like anything's possible. Like truly anything is possible. Before when people said like, hey, anything's possible, I was like, yeah, like a lot of stuff is possible, but not like anything is possible. And I was like, no, like truly it is the restrictions and limitations of your life are self-imposed. And some of those are totally cool. You might want to impose limitations on your life because they're ethical or they're moral or they're the kind of life you want to live, right? We all do that. But there's so many limitations we put on ourselves that we just think are the way the world works. And none of those are real. Yeah, man, I don't know how much you want to dive into the actual process, but for me, it really kind of all happened in that one deep session. And I think you told me to spend a couple of days after that kind of journaling it out. I did a lot of journaling, like literally pages and pages and pages of just stuff. And yeah, really amazing experience.
So, Dan, are you comfortable sharing what you thought your problem was and what your actual problem was?
Sure. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what I thought my problem was. I mean, I know that I had a lot of issues over in my marriage and feeling attractive and feeling desired and all these things. And this dynamic that had kind of existed between my wife and I. Now, I say between my wife and I, really, this is a dynamic that existed primarily between myself and a projection of my wife that I projected on her. Right. So pretty much all happening in here. But a lot of was like, well, here are my issues. They're still about me, but they're about how I interact with other people. Right. When we actually got into the session, part of the session was you're kind of casting back and looking at memories from earlier in your life. And I ended up sort of connecting with a lot of things that, one, I didn't really remember that I remembered. Right. So there are things coming up in the session that I was like, I don't even know how that's connected to this. I haven't thought about that in three decades or something like that. And I sort of realized after the fact that what had happened to me, which is kind of something that you talk about all the time, it's something that happens to a lot of people. You learn things about yourself and about the way the world works as a child, where you don't have the experience or the intellectual capacity to examine those beliefs about the world. You just take them in and you're like, well, the adults seem to believe that stuff, so they must know what they're doing. They're much bigger than me, right? And I depend on them for food and shelter and all that stuff. So you take that kind of stuff in, and it kind of lives all the way down at the bottom of the intellectual ocean, right? You've got your beliefs up top about, hey, here's how I rationalize these things. Here's the evidence I put together that things are this way. But the actual like fundamental belief about it's all the way down there below all that stuff, pre-rational. And so what ends up happening is the manifestation of the issue that I was having, this negative voice, right? It really goes all the way back to a time when I was a kid. As an adult, you would never accept that in and just say like, yeah, of course, I'm a total jerk because X, Y, Z, right? But as a kid, you don't have the psychic defenses to really keep that stuff out, particularly if you're in a situation where you feel at risk or ill at ease or whatever. So that was kind of what ended up happening. It was like, oh, it's not really about this stuff that's happening right now. The stuff that's happening right now is triggering this stuff that happened 40 years ago or something. And to me, that was a total mind-blowing moment, right? Like, I've read my Freud. If you'd ask me like, hey, what's the unconscious all about? What's your subconscious about? What's a repressed memory? I could tell you, but I didn't really believe in that stuff until I actually experienced it. And that was a eye-opening moment for me, a really eye-opening moment for sure.
Incredible, incredible. You said so many great things. So first of all, your behavior was controlled by thoughts and emotions that you either didn't think about for 40 years or some of my clients never thought about at all. Yeah. And people are like, well, how is that possible? Because your subconscious mind controls your behavior. And so you don't necessarily always can recall, but you always remember, your body remembers those. So what you said is what's happening current day is never about what's happening. So when you are arguing with your spouse, listener, it is never, ever about the argument at hand. It's always about a time in your life, usually as a child, where someone made you feel a certain way, and your brain is actually doing what it should be doing because it senses danger. When you feel negative emotion, you're like, look for the lion. So your brain goes, what's the worst thing that could happen? It taps your subconscious mind back to when you're a child and pulls that into the present. And so you are being controlled by something that you didn't even know. And that's why traditional talk therapy, which I know, I think you said you've done and I did for 30 years, oftentimes doesn't get the job done because they're focusing on the symptoms. So Dan, let's start talking about like how we can not talk bad about yourself. So when this happens, let's go for a run or let's do this. But none of that stuff works when you've got these deeply seated beliefs that I'm not enough. Like my parents or my caregivers did something that made me feel not enough. And it's buried in my brain right now.
Yeah. I'm a believer in therapy. I'm in therapy now. I get a lot out of it, right? Particularly if you look at like cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of the predominant therapeutic paradigm. It's there in the name. It's cognitive and it's behavioral. It's trying to solve problems at a certain level. And for many problems, that's awesome. It's really helpful, right? But there is a certain class of problems where, just like you said, the root cause is so deep down that you can't really solve it up here, right? Like I was sort of thinking like, you imagine like Play-Doh or some kind of like clay, and you take like a baseball and you make an impression in the clay. You like push that baseball all the way down and it makes this bump out, right? And then it's like you're staring at the clay trying to imagine like what could have made this thing, right? You're looking at the impression rather than the object that created it, right? And when you look at a problem that has its roots in the subconscious, the behavior is like the clay that's like bulging out, right? It tells you something about the cause, but not everything, right? And so if you try to solve everything at the wrong level, you tend to get these problems that just reoccur. I've tried to solve this a million different times, a million different ways. I've been to like 5 therapists. I would say like, I'm only promiscuous with my therapists, basically. Just like I've seen every therapist in town. Or I've read a million books, right? These are problems that I've been trying to solve at an intellectual and conscious level for years and years and years, right? But it was only when we didn't do that, right? When we tried to go a different route and say, well, hey, let's go to the unconscious, subconscious, whatever you want to call it, right? And see what's there. The problem just kind of solved itself, right? Yeah, I think if you had told me that up front, I probably wouldn't have worked with you. right? It's sort of weird. Like, I would have been like, yeah, that sounds like, eh, you can't really like prove that in a lab and like blah, blah, blah.
If I told you what specifically?
If you were like, hey, I'm going to go to your unconscious, it's childhood trauma and blah, 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 right? Because I would have been like, none of that feels true to me now, right? It's only after the fact that you see that, right? By definition, something that's repressed isn't consciously acceptable. So it doesn't seem like it makes a whole lot of sense, right? And now, I know, of course, after gone through that process and then read a lot about after it, there's actually a lot of scientific research that sort of points in this direction, right? That sort of points to the fact that, like, yeah, you can't really consciously access all of the causes for your behavior, right? But at the time, I was so skeptical of that idea, I might have been resistant to it, right? So it's sort of a catch-22. But yeah, I got to say, it was pretty amazing. And one of the things that I would point out, if anybody's listening to this, you're considering doing this kind of work with Brad, first of all, I would highly recommend it. But also, we say, like, you know, repressed memory and like trauma or whatever, and it sounds like really hard and scary. And it wasn't like that. It actually was a very pleasant experience for me. And everybody's different, so your mileage may vary. But it didn't feel like excavating these deep wounds. And oh my God, it was really relaxing. It was like I was tensing a muscle and suddenly learned how to release it, right? I would classify it as a very pleasurable experience. So
Yeah, we can't relive the experiences of our past. We just review them. So you remember I said, hey, you're lying on this beach and you're actually lying on this cloud over the water at this fantastic beach. You're the most relaxed you've ever been. It's a perfect weather. The temperature is perfect. There's a little breeze. The sun is shining. And you're just reviewing these scenes on a TV monitor like 20 feet away.
Yeah.
So I think you, Dan, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when you came to me on our self-love quiz, you had lack of self-love. And I think in those 5 short weeks, you jumped from lack of self-love to mild self-love to extreme self-love. If you're sitting here thinking, well, I wonder if that's me, or if I have negative self-talk, or what's my self-esteem like? Because I thought for years and years, I had self-love and I thought I had self-esteem and I thought that I didn't care what other people thought. And it was all just a lie. So I created this quiz for my clients and for anyone that wants it. It's a self-love quiz. Change always begins with awareness. So the number one thing you have to do is you've got to be aware that something isn't right. You can look at your past and you look at your relationships and your results and stuff, or you can take this 2.5 minute quiz at bradchandler.com/love and find out. Dan, so you started at the beginning saying that you came to me to turn the notch of the negative self-talk down a couple notches. You've completely eradicated that. It's gone from an 11 to a 0. What else in your life has changed?
Yeah, that was one of the most interesting things about this is there's a lot of stuff where you might do it and feel amazing after for like a day and then go back to your normal self or whatever. You get really pumped up or really excited. One of the most interesting parts of this has been watching the sort of follow-on effects over time. Again, my understanding of what the problem was fairly limited. And so before all this happened, if you'd asked me like, hey, if this voice goes away, what's going to happen in your business? I would have said like nothing or very little, right? But I have found myself making different decisions about my business. I've found myself being more direct with employees. I found myself more focused on the things that I think are really critical. I found myself more focused on things in my own behavior that I can spot as, hey, this isn't really working for me. This is kind of suboptimal. I really need to work on this. This is an area of growth for me, right? So I'm more open to that kind of feedback. In my marriage, I would say how I show up in my marriage is wildly different, right? So my marriage is definitely the best it's ever been at this point.
Yeah.
So like, it's a two-way street marriage, obviously, right? You don't have 100% control over anything that happens. So just the way I show up is very different. I would also go through these real periods of like doom and gloom. My wife would do something and I would just be real inside. And maybe once, and it was much milder, and I really haven't had it since. Like, that's been a huge change. I look better with my kids. And here are things that, like, I'm a data person, right? So two things that I found really interesting. every single week, among a bunch of other stuff that I track in this giant spreadsheet dashboard that I make my poor employees fill out for me, which it's like a nightmare, but I just want to show up and like look at all the data. It's two things I track every week on top of a bunch of other things. One is exactly how many calories I consumed and how many calories I plan to consume. And the difference between those things is called the caloric deviance. I call it my caloric deviance. It's a percentage. So I'm like, what percentage is my caloric deviance this week? And the goal is neither to eat more, eat less necessarily. The goal is to eat exactly what I plan to eat, right? So caloric deviance. So how big is small? One of the things I've noticed is my caloric deviance went from like 10% average a week to around 1.5% a week. So totally wild. The percent change there is very abnormal. That's been basically since we worked together. That was really wild. The other thing that was really interesting was around the time that we worked together, I had an ablation. So I have atrial fibrillation, which is like an arrhythmia in the heart. It makes me feel lightheaded. It's super annoying. My doctor was like, hey, surgery is probably the best fit for you at this point. Medications and stuff hadn't really worked. So went in, got the surgery. They basically snake a little thing up through your ephemeral artery into your heart and cauterize a part of your heart. And that stops the AFib from happening. It was a one-day thing, but I had to spend like 2 weeks recovering from it. And now in my sheet, I track my heart rate variability, right? Which is basically how good is your body at modulating your fight or flight or like kind of relaxing systems, right? So it's like, how good is it? It's like bringing you up when you need to be up, and how good is it at chilling you out when you need to chill out? Now, my heart rate variability was like doing its whole thing for several years. When I got the ablation, basically dropped almost all the way down to zero, right? I just had heart surgery and then sort of came up a little bit. And then we worked together. And what I noticed was it had come up a little bit. It had plateaued much lower. You want a high heart rate variability. So it was much lower than it was. And then like over the last couple months, it's like started to come all the way back, right? So it's like, I think that whether or not you attribute that purely to what we did or whatever, who knows, right? But I will say that from a purely subjective point of view, I find my ability to modulate my attitude much better. And I want to be clear to people, like, I'm not saying like, I worked with Brad and all my problems went away, right? Like every day I walk outside and like, problems are a part of life, right? The things happen that are suboptimal, right? If it rains on your wedding day or whatever it's going to be, stuff happens. What has changed is like my reaction to those things is much more in line with the person I want to be than it was before. And that's been wild, right? So it's like, how many parts of your life does that end up touching? It's kind of all of them, right? It's truly a holistic process in that way.
And Dan, tell us why, because now we're going to get in this a second. You've done a lot of study on this subject, but why? Why are you different now? Why are you behaving different? What did you learn that has led you to change your behavior?
I'm not consciously trying to change my behavior. My behavior has just changed, right? So in terms of why, I think that at my core, really deep down, I had this kind of operating paradigm that essentially said, hey, there's something wrong with me and you need to shape up, or the people around you are going to find out and terrible things are going to happen. That's just like 17 layers down at the Earth's crust. That's what's down there, right? That's my psychological magma. And that's filtered through all this other stuff and these conscious beliefs about the world and marriage and kids and all that stuff, right? But it informs your behavior in a variety of different ways. So for example, let's just say, like, if you really believe, hey, there's something wrong with me, I'm not enough in some way. And I don't even know I believe this, but I really believe deep down that if the people around me see the real me, they're going to reject me. Okay. You've got that. Let's just imagine you've got that subconsciously. Then fast forward, you're 40, you're with your wife, and your wife says, like, hey, I asked you to get milk and you didn't get milk. Like, it's kind of annoying. Like, you could have brought home the milk, right? In that situation, there's part of your brain, right? Call it the salience network or whatever. There's part of your brain that literally is like, hey, bro, like, red alert, red alert. Like, she's on to us. She knows you're going to divorce you. You're going to die alone. Like, it's
because you're no good, because you're not enough.
Exactly. Right. If someone who was enough would have brought home the milk. Right?
Yeah.
And so there's just a level of anxiety underlying everything. And whether you're aware of it or not depends on, did you have a good day? How much willpower do you have left stored away? Did you eat, like a million different things, right? And some days it might boil over and be right on the surface. You might freak out. Other days you might kind of be able to shove it deep down and be like, yeah, I'm just going to have like two beers after dinner. I'm not even going to think about it, right? Whatever, right? But it's informing your behavior in an unconscious way. And I think it's like when you remove that, now I'm like, well, now I can consciously decide to be a better dad. It's just that that thing isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And so the array of options for how you react to a situation is far greater. And therefore, it's a lot easier to end up with a behavior that serves you rather than not.
Because so, yeah. You no longer have to fight for your worthiness. Because what you learned is you are worthy and you are enough. And the problem in relationships, it's never the actual relationship. It's always the relationship that each individual has with themselves. You repaired that relationship you have with yourself. So now if your wife says something in the past, man, I lived this with two wives. Not the same time, two wives, they would say something and about something was wrong with me. And I would turn it on them because my subconscious was yelling at me. Hey, like you said, red alert, see, they're catching on to you. She knows that you're no good. She knows that you're no good. And I would fight and then I'd flight. And for days I would be cold to them. And now in my relationship, if my girlfriend comes to me and says, this is a problem, I'm like, okay, well, let's discuss it because I don't need to fight for my worthiness anymore because I always had my worthiness. It was just a silly story I told myself. So Dan, what are you up to these days? I know you've taken some interesting, some educational things. Do you want to share kind of what you're doing and why you did it?
Yeah. I mean, so my personality, man, I'm not a person who can let anything lie. So after we worked together, I was immediately like, I have to understand what just happened. My wife always jokes that like, if we ever get into a fight, to make something up. We get into a fight about like how to teach our kids how to ride a bike, right? A day will go by and then I'll show up and I'll be like, well, I've read 40 books on how to teach how to ride a bike. I've just been on Amazon. I've spent $1,000. That's just who I am, right? I read, I write, I take notes. That's been my, whether you want to call it a meditative practice or whatever, that's been who I've been for whoever. So after we worked together, I started studying RTT, the Rapid Transformational Therapy. It's very easy to kind of jump from there to a million other things. The thing that I've really become fascinated by in learning about hypnosis, trance, and guided meditation, and all these things that are kind of occupy the same thing is that we are kind of surrounded by these experiences all the time. We don't really recognize them as such. And I've particularly become really fascinated by the relationship between creativity and being hypnotizable, this idea that, hey, the part of your brain that deals with your unconscious, right? So the part of your brain that processes associationally or through metaphor or through symbolism, it's really nonverbal. That seems to me, or at least feels to me, to be the same part of the mind that creativity comes from, where you're just sitting there, you're trying to come up with something, and then bam, the muse strikes. And I have really spent a lot of time reaching out to musicians and artists that I'm friends with and kind of working with them and talking to them about their experiences. And for me, it's become much more a thing of, like I said, I can be very analytical, right? I can be very data-driven. My work, my day-to-day work, I run a marketing agency. That's what I need. But there's another part of me that's artistic and creative that I feel like as I've gotten older, I haven't done as good a job of feeding. And part of this for me is like, oh, it's kind of, it's a practice now. It's a practice of how do I talk to my subconscious? How do I tap into what is there? Because once you've had the experience of, hey, I worked with my unconscious mind and experienced a radical transformation that really like 10x my life for the better in many different ways. Then you're like, well, I kind of feel like I've been driving with the parking brake on for 20 years and no one told me, right? And so for me, I've been studying RTT. I find it incredibly fun and cool. We were talking about this before. It's a rabbit hole. There's a million different books to read, million different things. Incredible scientific research being done right now. People are really becoming interested in hypnosis. It's becoming more in vogue in a clinical setting. There just is a million different ways to go, but I've found it as kind of a window to view the world with, right? A lens of saying, why is that movie or book particularly effective, right? Why do some people seem so incredibly charismatic and persuasive and other people don't, right? Why is it that some people have these incredible creative leaps and insights and other people really struggle with that? As a lens for viewing the world, I found it to be very enriching, very fascinating. So yeah, I've been spending a lot of time, too much time. My wife is so sick of me turning to her and being like, you let me hypnotize you. And she's like, no, you're not allowed to hypnotize me. Terrible idea. But just like a million different facts of, hey, you know, Milton Erickson did blah, blah, blah. Or this guy over here did this.
Yeah. Make sure you get Hypnotherapy by Dave Elman because it's got some fascinating stuff. So you mentioned RTT. If you guys want to check out RTT and more about it, just go to bradchandler.com/RTT. Take us home in the next 30 seconds and just tell us, you mentioned the marketing agency. What is it and how can people contact you if they want to chat with you, Dan?
Sure. So the company is called AdWords Nerds. You can find us online at adwordsnerds.com or you can just Google AdWords Nerds and you will find us because we are number one in Google. At least for now.
Boom.
But yeah, so we're a marketing agency. We specialize in real estate investors, so primarily real estate driven, but do a lot of Google ads, Facebook ads, all that fun stuff. I always say anything is a microcosm of everything. And so Google ads, I find, is might sound boring, but it's an endlessly fascinating field where you can learn a lot about probability and game theory and all these amazing things. You can go there, check out our blog. We got a podcast, all sorts of fun stuff. But AdWordsNerds.com, this is the place to be.
Good stuff. And if you could share one last thing with our listeners who may be suffering, what piece of advice would you give them?
I would give them the advice that I most needed to hear. So maybe this is applicable to you, maybe not, but the advice that I most needed to hear is that you cannot solve an unconscious problem consciously. Like you can't think your way out of every single problem. It just doesn't work, right? And if you found yourself in a situation where the same pattern, same problem just keeps coming back and coming back, and you've tried a million different things, it's not you, and it's not all the stuff you tried. The problem is it doesn't live up here. It lives all the way down there. And so if you want to solve an unconscious problem, you got to find a way to go unconscious or to the subconscious directly. You could tell a good piece of advice because it would have been the hardest thing for me to accept, but was the one piece I was absolutely missing that really helped me change very quickly, man. So I got to say thank you to you because if it wasn't for you, I don't think I would have gone down that road at all.
Thank you. And so do you think hypnosis is the single best way to do that, to access the subconscious mind?
I think as far as things that we have easy access to that are very safe and very effective. Yeah, I think hypnosis is it. Would I swear up and down that there's no other way? I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
But I think that we have been doing hypnosis in one form or another for millennia now. And it's part of who we are as human beings. And the sooner you learn about that tool, the easier it is going to be to build the life that you want. So absolutely, I would recommend it is the number one way I would recommend for pretty much anybody if you're interested in this kind of stuff.
Dan, thank you for your time. Thank you for putting your trust in me to go on this journey with you. I am so proud of how far you've come. And man, I'm excited to see where this glorious life of yours takes you. So thank you. And that's a wrap on another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. If you enjoy this content, please like it, share it, rate it, whatever you want to do to get the word out. My goal is to help a million people end their suffering. I'm going to live for another 60 years. So I need your help. Enjoy or invite people to the group. We have an amazing Facebook group, How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. So till next time, love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.